from WCPB Channel 5 podcasts and SportsCenter 5. It's Take 5 with Chris Gasper.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Take 5 podcast. Today's guest, Chris Forsberg of NBC Sports Boston, and this is an emergency podcast because... That's Ellen Fleming giving you the siren wailing there because it's an emergency podcast with the Celtics making so many changes. We'll discuss the shock and aftershocks from the Celtics' big shakeup. Danny Ainge retiring as president of basketball operations. Brad Stevens leaving the bench and elevated to replace Danny Ainge. And it reminds me, Ellen, of something that Bill Belichick used to say when I would cover the Patriots. We'd ask him about switching a player from one position to another to cover a hole. He'd say, sometimes when you do that, you end up weaker in two spots. That's a real possibility here for the Celtics because they had a great coach and a great head of basketball ops. Now we'll see if Brad Stevens can make the transition to head of basketball operations. We asked Forsberg about that. Also, we talk about Brad Stevens having to find his successor as a coach. And could the Celtics once again break another significant basketball barrier? They were the first franchise to have an all-black starting five, the first franchise to have a black head coach with Bill Russell. Could they be the first franchise to have a female head coach? We discuss that with Chris, and Ellen also chimes in as well. She's a little skeptical that the NBA is that forward-thinking at this point. And besides the fact you have the big shakeup in the front office, you could have a big shakeup on the Celtics roster. We all thought that would be what we would be discussing after their five-game first-round exit at the hands of the Brooklyn Nets. A lot of heavy lifting on tap for Brad Stevens and what's left of basketball operations. And finally, when we are talking to Chris Forsberg, you're going to talk a lot of NBA, but you're also going to talk about a lot of Southern fast food chains. This is something he has an affinity for. He spends some time in Myrtle Beach. He loves going to these fast food chains, Ellen, that don't really exist above the Mason-Dixon line. Some of them I like, some of them I don't, but you were blown away and you literally thought we were making up these names.
Well, like most sports podcasts, we got talking about Applebee's. And so when he started talking about Zaxby's,
yes,
I thought he was trying to like make a joke that I wasn't getting about someone named Zach. But apparently that is a real place.
It's a real place. I've eaten there.
And he's very passionate about it. And I can definitely respect. I love a chain restaurant, so I can definitely respect a man who loves a chain fast food place.
Yeah, he loves all the ones that you can't find up here. Like a Bojangles is one. You also have Perkins is difficult to find. He does like Zaxby's. He named a few other ones. We both talked about Chick-fil-A and the fact that while Chick-fil-A is up here, it tastes much better and completely different when you taste it in sort of its native land.
The home place, yeah, south of the Mason-Dixon.
Exactly.
Line. Yeah, it could be the chicken. Maybe it's the people. Maybe the people are more passionate about cooking it down there.
Yeah, they're definitely passionate about cooking, college football. It's even though it's still the United States, it's a little bit of a different culture down there. I would say for better and for worse. But I want to ask you this. What's your favorite fast food restaurant?
I would say probably I was a very staunch Wendy's devotee.
Oh.
But since I've moved to Quincy, there is a Popeyes down the street from me. And I am like blown away by their chicken sandwiches.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they are chain restaurant quality chicken sandwiches.
So, you know, Danny Ainge, his favorite fast food restaurant was Chipotle. And he had like the Chipotle.
Yes.
Remember?
Yes.
We talked about this?
Yes.
And he said he would not hook you up with the, what
yes,
was it, a gold card or a black card?
It was
card?
A black card. And he never put me in contact with those people.
Yeah. Well, he knew he was on his way out.
Yeah, you're right. And he didn't want to like blow his favor before.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. That's definitely it.
Yeah. For me, I would have to say I love In-N-Out in Los Angeles. I'll get off the plane and go straight to In-N-Out. I love In-N-Out.
You're right. I still like Popeyes more, but In-N-Out is very good. Yeah.
And the other one that they have there, but they also have around here, I'm a big fan of Panda Express at the airport.
That's food court food.
Oh, that's true. Is there a difference?
Yes. If there's not a drive-thru, it's not fast food.
Oh, I didn't know there were all these rules.
Yeah, that's how I feel passionate about this.
Yeah, you're as passionate as Forsberg.
I really am. That's why I was like, I know you like are a big sports guy and like that's where you found your niche, but like maybe we should get into the like the food business, the food podcast world.
Yes. Well, we will have to bring Forsberg back for a podcast about fast food. In the meantime, this podcast is about who is going to be making the recipe for success for the Boston Celtics. It's not Danny Ainge. He no longer is the chief chef. It is now Brad Stevens. So more on that coming up right now with Chris Forsberg. He's next.
Hey, Boston, let's talk sports. WCVB Sports Center 5, The Contact.
Source at MLB tells me.
Expert analysis.
That's going to be a major point of contention.
On air.
I talked to a high-ranking source.
And exclusive articles free on the WCVB app. Duke Castiglione, Chris Gasper, Bob Halloran, and special correspondent Mike
Once
Lynch.
Again,
the strongest team covering Boston's teams.
The only game in town.
WCVB Sports Center 5 on Boston's news leader.
All right, as promised, now joining us is Chris Forsberg of NBC Sports Boston for this emergency podcast. He had big plans for the offseason, and those went out the window right away with the shakeup with the Celtics. Danny Ainge is out as president of basketball operations, choosing to retire. Brad Stevens is off the bench to replace him. So the Celtics looking for a new coach. They'll have a new president of basketball operations and a new coach next season. Forsby, how are you recovering from what happened on the first day of your alleged offseason?
Yeah, it's I think one of our game producers, Paul Lucy, was as we were leaving the building on I don't even know what night it was, Tuesday night, and said, I'm going to see if I can find my golf club, start dusting them off. And then I texted him yesterday. I said, maybe wait a couple of days on that. And it just felt like it was going to be a busy offseason already. And then to have that sort of bomb dropped in our lap yesterday really just sort of hammered home that a lot of changes are going to happen. And, you know, I thought it was going to all be roster related, but clearly the Celtics felt like they needed a little bit of shakeup at the top of the organization. And maybe the unsatisfying way that the season played out made it easier to ease into those changes. I still don't like. Guess, help me out here. I know you're the host. You're supposed to be asking me questions, but did their body language, did that seem like two guys who were like, yeah, this is great. This is what Danny Ainge was like reluctantly going into retirement, and Brad Stevens was reluctantly losing the coach title that has decorated his life. Like, do you think they're psyched for this new challenge?
Well, it's an interesting point you raise, and you would know better than I would because you know both of those guys better than I do, being around them all the time for the last 8 years and even longer with Danny, who was here for 18 years going back to 2003. I thought everybody put a good face on it, but to your point, yeah. I mean, I looked at it. I didn't like they, you know, ownership kept trying to spin it as this great move for the Celtics, and I didn't really see it that way. And I go back to, I know both of us have covered the Patriots, something that Bill Belichick used to always say when we'd ask him, hey, you know, you got this guy who's hurt, Matt Light's hurt. Do you think you'll move Sebastian Vollmer from right tackle? And he would always say, well, you have to think about it. Because sometimes if you move a guy from a spot he's really good at, you just end up weaker at two spots instead of one. And that's kind of how I feel about this with the Celtics and moving Brad. Brad's a great coach, and I know there were maybe some issues with buy-in and tune-out and stress for him, but I think it's going to be hard to find another Brad Stevens, and you're moving him into a role that there's no evidence he'll be as good at as he was as a coach. So for me, I would have left Brad exactly where he was, given him the power, but just brought in somebody to help him with sort of the day-to-day in the front office. So I know the Celtics are selling this as a step forward, but it doesn't feel that way to me. I think at best it's a lateral move.
Yeah, you know, and like, look, I think Brad, like, I don't know whatever, what is the qualifications to be an NBA GM? Do you like, there's no test you take that you're like, okay, you're ready. You know the salary cap, you know this, you know that. It's just more of a feel thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Brad's been around it. I think there's a little bit of osmosis being around Danny Ainge, seeing how he operates. He'll still have the staff there. So like the cap stuff, you can go to Mike Zarin and say like, how does this work? What do I got to do? Like, you know, I assume Brad knows how sign and trades work and all that minutia, but you know, I don't get the sense that Brad's been on the phone every day calling assistant GMs and GMs and trying to broker trades. So it's going to be a little bit of a feel out process. But one thing I know is that Brad has succeeded at whatever he's put his mind to.
True.
And I feel pretty confident that he'll be good in that role, but will he have the bravado that Danny Ainge had to make those moves? Like, what do we know about Brad as a coach? Like, very level, you know, very measured, you know, like when I think of how he coaches, I don't necessarily think of the way Danny Ainge runs a basketball operation. Now we can say Danny Ainge didn't always get to the finish line of deals. That became the running joke about, you know, trade deadlines. But, you know, I'll be very interested to see, like, does Brad hire a coach? Does he trade Kemba? Like, is he just going to come in and just shake this thing up? Or is it more like, all right, you know, let's tinker on the fringes and let's play this safely and let's use these. I don't know. So I'm fascinated to see what kind of a GM he's going to be. Again, I think he'll find his way and he has the right support staff. But to your point, what happens now with the coach? So Brad has this endless Rolodex. He hosts coaching retreats every year. He's had a billion coaches through the walls. I think it's actually going to be almost daunting for him to try to figure out who the 5, 10, whatever number it is that he brings in and tries to figure out who the next coach should be. You know, he made the joke that the next guy doesn't have a lot to live up to. He just has to be better than the last guy. But, you know, there is some pressure there. Like, he's going to find the guy who maybe can do what Brad didn't in terms of motivating Jalen and Jason to be the best players, to figure out how to get them to be the best together. So the one thing I keep walking away with is, Brad's really walking into a hornet's nest here. Like, this is a heavy lift. This is a yes. tough, daunting situation, and he's got to figure that out.
Yeah, it'd be tough for anyone, never mind someone who doesn't have a ton of front office experience. Now, look, obviously, all along, Brad's been involved with player personnel decisions. They talked about that. He's been involved in the draft. It's not like he has no idea what's going on, but it is a little different when you are the final decision maker. And I thought that Brad and Danny really complemented each other because Brad was sort of a level-headed guy, somebody that maybe at least, you know, in front of the media or just the public face on it, he put was usually positive, not overly critical. Well, I thought Danny was sort of a little bit more shoot from the hip, a little bit more bloodless in the way he would make deals or talk about players. And I thought they complemented each other in that way. And so now you're sort of losing that. And we'll be interested to see how Brad is as a general manager, where sometimes you do have to criticize your players. Or, like, for example, a guy like Marcus Smart, who he's really fond of, you know, Brad Stevens, the coach, has a great affinity for Marcus Smart and how much he can help the coach in that job. But Brad Stevens, the president of basketball operations, has to look at it and say, longest tenured guy, haven't made a finals with him, going to the last year of his contract. We need a roster shakeup. He's one of our few valuable pieces. We might not want to part with him, but we have to explore it and we might have to move on from him. Is he going to be capable of doing that?
Yeah, are we going to get loose cannon, Brad? Like, is he just going to change personalities here and be like ruthless? And, you know, I don't know. That's a great question. So, and I think that you brought up the perfect example. Like, if I'm Marcus Smart, losing Danny Ainge is not a great sign for my long-term future in Boston. I think Danny was very in love with the way Marcus played and the energy he brought. And I think Brad, the coach, is probably looking at it saying, if I see one more 1-for-9 shooting night, and I don't care how much all defense he can be, like, this guy needs to figure out his role. So what does Brad do in that situation? You know, as he prepares to potentially have to pay him his next contract. Now, some of that might, you know, hinge on what happens with the rest of the roster. But yeah, I think we'll get such a great sense moving forward of what does Brad really think about these players? Because he used to have this deflection where he'd be like, well look, Danny puts the roster together. I just coach him. Now it's like, well, do you really like Grant Williams? And I will say this. I think the one thing we know is that Brad is always deferred to veterans over rookies. Yeah. And I can see a much grander shift to veteran presences and guys that the next coach, because he's not going to want the new coach to run into the same problems that he had, where he looked down his bench and said, oh man, Semi Ojeleye, Grant Williams, Carson Edwards. Like, are we serious here? Like, he wants to give them pieces that they can actually lead on.
So that's an interesting point you bring up. And it goes back to something that someone told me about Brad Stevens, I think in his first season here. And someone in the organization said this to me when I was sort of questioning them about the direction of the franchise. And this person said, Brad Stevens would light himself on fire to win one NBA game. Obviously, that's hyperbole, but Brad is hyper competitive. And as the coach, I think you have sort of the luxury of looking at everything from a micro standpoint. You know, we have to win this game. We have to win this day. We have to win this quarter. We have to win this possession. Well, when you're president of basketball operations, your responsibility is to defer to the macro, to 30,000 foot view. And will Brad be able to do that? Because what you just brought up, the new coach, okay, I want to make sure he has better options. I want to make sure there's veteran options for him. That's great. But veteran guys like a Tristan Thompson or Jeff Teague, who got traded, they are what they are, and they're not going to get any better. They have a ceiling. For me, for this team to grow and get to a championship level, they need better than that. And that means investing in young players and living with their growing pains. So do you think Brad will be able to pivot from a personality standpoint, from an outlook standpoint, and be able to take the big picture view that this organization needs instead of the little picture view he had as the coach?
Whew. Ooh, that's a great question. I mean, I think it's the biggest challenge he's going to face is going to kind of having to change his mentality. Because just like you said, he's so hyper-focused on winning that game, on being at the top of the standings and positioning themselves. Like, he's very rarely been able to step back and say, look, Aaron Nesmith's development is way more important this year than making sure Jeff Teague is happy he came here and has minutes. And, you know, that's got to be a new focus for him. And maybe it's going to have to force him out of his comfort zone a little bit. I think there will be an internal struggle for him at first, you know, but, you know, he's just going to have to resign himself that you're stepping back. You have to change in terms of what you do. I'll be fascinated to see if he can do it.
Me too. And I do want to go back to just the coaching hire, because I think that's obviously where it starts for Brad. I did want to get some names from you, some guys that you think could potentially be in this job. And I also want to say, I had the opportunity to speak with somebody in the organization. And one thing I brought up, Forsberg, was the fact that if I were a coaching candidate, I might have some hesitancy, some reservations about working for Brad Stevens, because he's a really, really good coach. And he might be able to understand some of my shortcomings and my misgivings more than somebody else would. So it's not just following in Brad's footsteps. It's if Brad doesn't like the way it's being done, he can just kind of say, well, you know what? I'll just do it myself. You're out. Now, this person said, hey, whoever ends up in the Celtics organization as coach would have to be somebody that would not be looking over their shoulder, and basically said, hey, do you think a guy like Doc Rivers would be intimidated by following Brad? Do you think Brad was intimidated by following Doc? I get it. They want someone with a strong enough personality and confidence to not worry about that, but I would be worried about that. So with that long wind up here, give me some names of guys that you think are realistic. And do you think maybe Brad being the president of basketball operations will deter some candidates from taking the job, knowing how good he was as a coach?
It's a fascinating question. I don't know if I can see there being some hesitation having to follow Brad. I think for Brad too, there's going to be this perpetual itch to want to go back and coach, because that's all he's ever known. But I think when he dives into a challenge, he does try to embrace it. So who can they seek out that would be okay in that role? I don't know. So, you know, I think there's this propensity to go for retreads in the NBA, and the Celtics have typically steered clear of that. But like, did Lloyd Pierce get a fair shake down in Atlanta? You know, I think, you know, I start thinking about people that Brad has relationships with, you know, from either whether that's on the college level and all the smart college coaches he came across, like the guys that haven't made that the NCAA to pro jump just yet, you know. Scal threw out Kara Lawson the other day. I don't know if she's, and I think it checks every box about, you know, having the relationship with the players, you know, innovative hire, like, you know, the Celtics would not, Brad Stevens being the first GM to hire a female coach would be not surprise me in the least. Ultimately, you know, did she get enough experience at Duke, and is she ready? Can she leave that situation after only coaching what, 4 games because of the pandemic and all that? So I just think he's going to really dive into this, and the key has to be who can motivate Jalen and Jason the most. And so I almost defer back to, you know, what do they want? What kind of coach will they want to push them? You know, they reacted well with a guy like Pop at Team USA, right? Like someone who was like on them a little bit, like Jalen got thrown to the floor and Pop was on him and moved the ball, you know? So do they need a little bit more of that discipline? You know, do you think they go to Jason and Jalen and say, like, here's who we're like, not necessarily here, tell us who we should go look at, but here's who we're thinking about. How do you feel about this? Like, they have to be involved in the process.
They will
right?
be. Yeah. Again, you know, same source that I spoke to yesterday mentioned the fact that, yeah, those guys will be consulted to a degree, but I mean, they're obviously not going to make the decision, but ultimately the decision is Brad's. And I wonder how much of Brad's experience the last couple of years with those two guys, and maybe any feeling Brad had, even though the Celtics deny it to the hilt, that there was a tune out factor or a burnout factor for Brad. I disagree. I think there was a little bit of a tune out factor, and I think there was a little bit of a burnout factor. And I wonder how much that will factor into his decision making for this new coach, knowing that these are guys that are capable, if they don't like the way things are going, of tuning out the coach a little bit.
Yeah. And I think Brad had to worry about that from his own perspective, right?
Like, yes.
Let's talk, you know, if Brad was sitting there and they bring in a new GM and this team still struggles next year, who's the next fall guy?
Brad.
Like, yeah. So, I mean, I think there's a little bit of, and I don't think he, like, that was his ultimate reason. I think there is a combination of factors that there was some intrigue with this new position and the idea of getting to hire his next coach and having that continuity and chemistry like he had with Danny was alluring to him. But I think there's, you start looking around and going like, look, if I don't get this thing right, where, what's my future? And maybe it doesn't matter. He could go, he's going to be, Indiana would have been waiting for him. Duke is open now. Like there would have been jobs for him. But so let's throw out the names that are out there. Like,
okay,
does Sam Cassell, Chauncey Billups, do those former player types do anything for you?
They definitely do. Yeah. I mean, Sam Cassell spent a long time as an assistant coach, and you see some assistant coaches get elevated pretty quickly. That happened, you know, that happened in Indiana this year. So the experience thing, you can talk about that, but there's a lot of guys. Brad had no NBA experience. He had head coaching experience, but no NBA experience. And you can certainly elevate an assistant in Chauncey Billups, spending time on Ty Lue's staff. I do have some interest in those guys. I think maybe a guy like Juwan Howard, if he were willing to leave Michigan, spend a lot of time on the Miami Heat staff. I have great respect for Eric Spoelstra and what he's done. Spoelstra, another guy who was a longtime assistant, had no head coaching experience. So those guys do something for me. And maybe I think the Celtics do need a little bit of a firmer hand and somebody with playing experience, which brings me back to Kara Lawson. And I want to bring Ellen in on this, because Ellen, in previous podcasts we've talked about, has, although she's a huge advocate for a female coach in the NBA, just doesn't believe that a team would be willing to pull the trigger. So Ellen, what goes through your mind when you hear that the Celtics could have interest in Kara Lawson, who spent some time here as an assistant, is now the head women's basketball coach at Duke, or Becky Hammon, who we've talked about a lot in the past on this podcast, who's been a longtime assistant for Greg Popovich and actually was the acting head coach at times this season for him. Do you think the Celtics could break yet another barrier here with a female head coach?
Half of me would say it would change the entire landscape of the NBA should a woman just get a shot to be a head coach. But the other half of me is, if you put a woman as a head coach of a team that is not capable of winning, then that could hurt women in the future of becoming head coaches. Women have to work twice as hard for half as much. And if a woman is put in charge of a team that is going to lose, it's not going to be because the team is bad. It's going to be because she is a woman. And I can already hear the jokes that are going to be made and the comments that are going to be made. And that also scares me. I don't know how many players really would listen to a woman coach. That's where I fear is the biggest problem, unless she could somehow be the absolute best coach in the entire world and make any team into a champion team, which I don't think is fair to put on a woman, because she is the first woman of an NBA team.
Yeah.
So it's exciting on one half, because it could happen, and that would just break barriers for so many people in the future.
Absolutely.
And then on the other half, it could cause this dialogue amongst fans, amongst Bostonians, especially, that, you know, get her off the team. She can't handle it. She's a woman. She's never played at this level as a man.
But someone like Kara Lawson played at a higher level than Brad Stevens.
Yes, but there's also that complete disrespect for women athletes in general, that even though she played at a higher level, she played at a higher level as a woman. And that's still seen by a lot of people as completely different than a male sport. So I'm torn.
Yeah. I mean, I think, look, male coaches fail all the time. So if a female coach were to fail, I don't think it would be because they're a female. I think it would be because coaches fail all the time. But I hear what you're saying from a perception standpoint.
I think you're thinking as like an enlightened human.
I think we need to stop
giving people that benefit of the doubt that that's where we are as a society, because we're not.
But I will say this, whoever the coach is of the Celtics, I think that there's going to be pressure on them to get this thing turned around, Forsby. And when I look at it, I think that I don't think the Celtics are as far away from being a championship team as it looks right now. Just like I don't think that they were as close as they thought after making the Eastern Conference Finals last year. But when you have two really great young pieces like Tatum and Brown, you're going to have expectations.
Just so a real thing on real quick on the female coaching thing. The great thing about someone like Kara or Becky or whoever, if they brought in someone who has that sort of experience and has gotten at least a little taste of the NBA level, I think they could block out that noise. They wouldn't listen to the knuckleheads that would be sitting there screaming about that. And I think they would have so much support and empowerment from the organization that I would hope that, you know, that no one would go into it with trepidation. It's just like, you're going to break barriers. You're going to, but not because, you know, that it's just the right move. Like Kara Lawson has shown she can be an NBA head coach based on the small sample that we've had. Now, you know, you probably feel a little bit more comfortable if she has more time on the bench at Duke and more experience, but like she had the respect of every player when she was here in Boston at, you know, working with Jason and Jalen after practices. And I think she would be phenomenal in that role, but there will be pressure. I mean, that's undeniable that, you know, I think it's more on Brad as sort of the guy who's still here and has to put this thing together. And end of the day, like when I look back at last season, where did I throw most blame? It probably goes on Danny for roster construction. You know, the coach can only do so much with what they've got. And we keep hearing like, you know, it wasn't Brad's fault. Danny was on the radio today saying it again, that it's more on the players than on him. And so I think they would, that coach would have the luxury of like, hey, I just got here. I'm trying to figure this out. This is what Brad has given me to work with. But yeah, like they're going to have to, they hit the ground running. Like we can't be, you know, I know a lot of people were upset when they heard Marcus Smart talking about Eastern Conference Finals after that game five loss, because that's not what we do here.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's the Celtics. We hang banners for one thing and one thing only, championships. Get out of here with your maybe Eastern Conference Finals three times in 4 years. This isn't the Indianapolis Colts where you hang a banner for being AFC finalist. I mean, have a little bit of understanding of the organization you play for. Come on.
Yeah. We don't put up 16-0. Banners around here, but
that was a cheap shot. Personally offended and wounded by that. You know how I feel about that Patriots team and that season. I'm not going to get into that argument with you. I'll just say lots of teams get hot at the end, lose five games and win a championship. Find me another team in the era of the 16 game season, which is now over because it's 17 games now, that won every game. I would argue it's a more impressive accomplishment, but that's, I digress.
That's a whole nother podcast, yes, but they took that banner down, right? Did that banner come down?
It did.
Okay, I just want to make
you're sure. Really poking the bear here. You're really doing this.
We can do a whole another episode, yes, after this one on that.
I'm very angry
that
about
criminal
this.
Banner. So that's the thing. That's like they were right there. And I think that's the most maddening part when you examine where the Celtics are as an organization, is that Danny Ainge, for, you know, from essentially 2012, 2013 until 2018, did not make a bad move. Like, you can't tell me there was anything in there that, like, there was some like little stuff like trading for Austin Rivers and just letting him go for pretty much nothing. Yeah. But that was just when they were kind of churning and bringing guys in and just trying to get assets and asset accumulation. But like, they made every right step up through Kyrie. And then that experiment went terrible. And now it's almost like the scene in Christmas Vacation where Chevy Chase hands his son the tights. And that's Ainge. That's Ainge going, oh, here you go. You know, get the knot out here. And it's not Danny's fault. I think he made it. There's been some drafting issues for sure. Yeah. But
should have made that Miles Turner trade.
we can do a whole nother podcast on that as well.
Yes.
I might be swinging to your side now, because after watching Evan Fournier's defense in the playoffs, I am a little bit leery about what happens next there. But yeah, like they've got to figure out how to get this thing back to a championship level while there's all these wholesale changes going around the organization, from the GM to the coach to like what does the roster look like? So it feels like a really important offseason. Like, I feel like the other night I wrote after the game five, you know, about the tough decisions ahead, but I introed it with this like kind of like glimpse of the future in terms of.
I read it. It was very good, Colin.
So but to me, we're at the junction point. Like, okay, if we're going to, I joked about, okay, Tatum's wrapping up his Hall of Fame career, scoring titles, all that. But if that's going to happen in Green, the next year or so kind of dictates that. Like, they've got to put the right pieces around them. They've got to show they can be a contender, or else all of a sudden all the people sitting there going, oh, pair him up with Bradley Beal, get, you know, make your super team up here. Well, he might be going somewhere else to do that. So a lot of pressure on Brad and Coda to get this right.
And that goes back to the coaching thing in terms of, you know, the coach is sort of on the clock, and the clock is the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, can I win here clock. And that's obviously an issue for the organization too. And just to go back to what we're talking about in terms of breaking basketball barriers with a female head coach, it would be right in line with the Celtics' history to do that. They were the first team to field an all-black starting five, the first team to have a black head coach in Bill Russell, and they would be the first team to have a female head coach. So that would be right in line with the Boston Celtics as an organization. I think we can discuss and debate the city that the Celtics play in and just how open that city maybe has been to minorities in certain positions, that's a different discussion. But the organization overall as a whole has been very much on board with promoting people that traditionally have not gotten opportunities and being barrier breakers in sports and society. So that would totally be on brand for the Celtics. I guess I want to go back, Chris, to really the beginning, something I should have asked you, I guess, just off the top. But because you and I have been so in the weeds of this the last couple of days, how surprised were you just by all this stuff? I mean, did you have any sense, for example, that Danny was going to step away after the season? There were some rumblings and rumors, and I've heard some reporters say they thought it was going to happen. Did you have any sense of that? One, and two, how surprised were you that it ended up being Brad being elevated to president of basketball operations?
Yeah, no. So, I mean, I did not have an inkling, and maybe it's just because we haven't been around the team as much this year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I really thought Danny would see this thing through until, you know, at least until the wheels fell off, or like if they just couldn't get back to a championship level. But it felt like, you know, he's the guy who drafted Tatum and Brown. I think he wanted to see it through and see if he could get Banner 18, sort of cap his GM tenure with going out on top. And, you know, I think I said it with you. I wasn't trying to be flip, but the man had two heart attacks and kept doing this job. Yes. Like I didn't think one bad season would necessarily derail it, but okay, he's 62. I do think the tribulations of this season played into a little bit of his decision. Like I know they said that he thought of this in March and everything, but they kept it pretty quiet. And I feel like there was still this like, all right, if he changes his mind before the end of the season, like, I don't think they would have rushed to go with the plans that they did. I thought it was telling that Brad Stevens said he didn't tell his own kid until the day after the, now maybe he was worried about little Brady leaking the story, but I think there was this like, okay, this is sort of like, this might happen, but they needed to get to the finish line of that. And so I think Danny just, you know, again, saw a little bit of the writing on the wall that, you know, sometimes you have to identify when it's your time to go before they tell you it's time to go. And maybe that sped this thing up a little bit more than I had saw coming. But the Brad part of it was the complete shocker, just because, and we do this with everybody, like we pigeonhole people and say, like, this is what they do. Like Brad Stevens is a coach, like 21 years of his life. You know, he left the job at Applebee's to go be an assistant coach at, you know, Butler, because he wanted to be a coach. And that was going to be the only thing he would ever do in his professional life from that point on. But, you know, things change. And I do think a little bit of the family dynamic, I think a little bit of the grind of the NBA probably made this a little bit intriguing. About like, you know, okay, the whole Parcells line, if they're going to ask you to cook the dinner, might as well let me buy the groceries. Yes. And I think he's intrigued by that. I think he recognized again that, you know, maybe his voice wasn't as strong as it had been in that locker room. And the idea that he could bring in someone that could maybe reach these guys and get the most out of this group. Sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself to get the most out of what's around you. And so I think it's just the way it all lined up. It made it easy, you know, but you can't tell me that if they went, let's say 50-32 this year, well, 50-22 this year because of the changes and it had a good postseason run. Would those changes have happened? Like, would Danny be walking away right now?
I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I don't either. And they can downplay it all they want, but I do think like it all factors in. And so definitely a little bit quicker than I would have thought. I think there's multiple universes where Brad is on that sideline for another 5-6 years. And they just, you know, seeing this through and until they, you know, the end of the Tatum era potentially, but things changed. And I think what it makes it a little easier for Danny to walk away, knowing that, you know, his guy is sort of the one in control now. It makes it easier for the organization to know that Brad's brain will still be around and how committed he is to finding this. But yeah, I was stunned. I will fully admit, I thought there would be changes. I thought like that they would go into a bunker for a few weeks and then they'd come out and say, okay, you know, we're adding some new people to the front office, adding some diversity and adding some new ways of thinking about things. But I did not expect Brad Stevens would be doing this. And I'm fascinated to see how it plays out.
Yeah, you're speaking my language now. You're talking about multiverses, a Celtics multiverse where Brad Stevens is still on the sidelines. You're speaking my Marvel Cinematic Universe language nice. Right now.
There's another one where he's still working at Applebee's.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Another one where he's won 5 national titles at Butler. I like
would
this.
Would he be the best waiter in like the history of Applebee's?
Oh, like 100%.
Like I feel like he
would be the one who, like, you ordered, like, they have, like, $1 drinks there. Obviously, I love Applebee's. So he'd be the one that, like, you stay a little bit too long and he knocks off, like, 3 drinks.
I feel like he'd be like very strategic in how he brought out your dishes.
Yes.
And like, you know, because like some waiters just they fail to come back and get that, you know, first bite check in to make sure, you know, you don't need anything. Do you need, you know, condiments or another drink or whatever? Brad would be on top of that. I just feel like he could have really excelled. I don't know what his ceiling would have been.
He's like rallying the kitchen. Work harder.
I could, you know,
but that's the other thing. He'd be in there and be like, guys, look, you know, a lot of adversity tonight, more slips on the board than I thought. But you guys, we need to keep our focus. I feel like we're producing well on the burger line, maybe a little quicker on the salads, but like, you know, I think like district manager would have been you know, wouldn't have been out of the realm for Applebee's, Brad.
I think he would have been the waiter, Forsby, who would have been like, look, we're a little off our game tonight. Maybe you want to head over to Zaxby's and just grab those chicken fingers. We, you know, we didn't really bring our A game tonight. If you want a really good meal, like, go to Zaxby's.
Yeah. So first off, Gasper, you can't reference places that we can't get up here. It drives me nuts. Like, if you brought Bojangles or Zaxby's into this conversation, it's hard enough to get a friggin' Sonic around here. And so now I'm yearning for chicken sandwiches, and I might just have to fly to South Carolina.
I did that to you on purpose to swing it back to the Celtics. I think we're in agreement here where it's like, yeah, I'm not totally buying the narrative they're putting out there either. I don't think that this was all about Danny's health, which I take very seriously, and this was an automatic, and he just, you know, thought in March that they were definitely going to do this. And I also don't buy 100% the idea that Brad would have been fine returning to the sideline. I think he wanted to change. I think he was a little burnt out and a little tuned out there. So that being said, are you surprised at all, or do you feel like they should have, once they knew Danny was definitely walking away, waited a little while to elevate Brad and maybe investigated some outside candidates? Our good friend Chris Mannix was banging the drum for Concord's own Sam Presti.
Yeah.
Masai Ujiri of the Toronto Raptors could be out there. Why not at least investigate these guys who you already know can do a great job as head of basketball ops, and you could have a home run hire as head of basketball ops and still have your coach who's very good on the bench, unless Brad didn't want to be on the bench anymore.
Ooh, I like this this plot twist you're throwing out there. I think that's what it comes down to. I think, you know, with if we trust their timeline and we know that Brad and Wick had that conversation in March, then I would assume that you start poking around the league, right? You start saying like, who is available?
Yes.
I gotta think you at least inquire with Masai. You inquire with, you know, whoever is on their list. Like, I can't imagine they call Kevin McHale. I know that was the fantasy back in the day before Danny.
What about Larry Bird? I mean, I know for a fact they did not call Larry Bird because I asked a team source that question. I was told no. But I mean, I would have called Larry Bird.
I think part of the allure of bringing in Brad was like young, fresh blood there when they brought him in, and like this idea that he could be here long term. And I think if I'm guessing, that's part of the reason you elevate him. Like, there's going to be continuity and structure there where if Brad does thrive in this role, he'll be here for as long as he wants to do this. And so I don't know if they're necessarily there's always that allure with Boston of former players.
Yeah.
But you can bring someone in and be like Paul Pierce. He's got some free time now. He can go and be like assistant to the general manager or whatever like crazy title you want to give him. But I don't necessarily think you need to put him in that big chair. I think you need to have that guy who's going to put in the hours, who's willing to do that. Is Larry Bird at this point, you know, does he want to do that? Like, what do we think? Is Michael Jordan in the trenches? Like, I don't know. So I think there's just, you have to balance that. But yeah,
sure.
I think they must have at least inquired with some people, like, at least find out, talk to Masai's agent and say, like, what's he thinking? Like, what's his next step? Where is he going? And if everything came back lukewarm, then it's like, you know, okay, we need to talk to Brad about this. And as soon as Brad seemed a little bit open to it, maybe they were like, okay, maybe this is the move.
And I also wonder a few things. You know, I was told that they feel like it's easier to find a really good head coach than a really good head of basketball operations, which they obviously feel Brad will be, or they wouldn't have elevated him. You know, you have an ownership group that loves continuity. They had, I mean, one essentially GM for 18 years. I mean, Danny was the guy they hired in May 2003, and he was head of basketball operations all the way through Wednesday of this week. So, you know, they like continuity and don't like a ton of change. And I also wonder this, and I know people have sort of shouted me down on this, but I mean, Brad Stevens's contract, if Brad was just going to walk away as coach, I don't know how the contract works out, but I think they still would have had to pay him. And if he has like 5 or 6 years left on that deal, Danny Ainge told us that and the Take Five podcast. The math's a little fuzzy to me because the way Danny said it, he made it sound like he had six more years beyond this season, which would kind of make you think it's the other way. I only say that it would kind of make sense because the Indiana offer was 7 years. 70 million. Yeah,
no, so maybe, but like my thing has always been, it feels like they gave him a 6-year deal out of the gates.
Yep.
3 years in, they tacked on 3 years. And then I think 3 years after that, they tacked on three more. So I think if I'm doing the math right, there's five more.
See, it's unclear to me. I thought it was that too. And then I went back and listened to Danny and I'm like, he's making it sound like there's six beyond. And then I guess I became like a conspiracy theorist and I was like, well, Indiana offered seven. So that would make sense. So whether it's five or six, you know, it seems like you might know it a little better than me. But either way, they're on the hook for this guy. They really like him and don't want to lose him. Do you feel like that factored into it at all? The continuity in the contract?
It's always part of the equation, right? Like you don't want to have to not pay it. You don't want to pay somebody to not work.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they would have found some role for him if, even if it wasn't coaching or GMing or something like that, you want to try to get, recoup value. But I don't think it was ultimately like the deciding factor. This, if the Celtics went on the market today, they'd be worth what, $3 billion or something like that based on what teams are selling for. I don't think, $50 million in the grand scheme of things is something that, would, you know, hurt this team long term. That being said, like, you know, they are about to pay a hefty sum in luxury tax, and Wick, you know, is coming off a couple of years now with the pandemic and no people in the building or just starting to get people back in the building. So it's all part of the equation. I do think, you know, again, I think everyone had a little bit of motivation and a little bit of reason to consider what ultimately played out. And, you know, we'll see if it was the right decision on all accounts.
Just, I want to go to, we solicited some questions and one of them we already got to. Juliana was asking about the possibility of a female coach. She mentioned Becky Hammond, who I'm a huge fan of. Mm-hmm. I would love to see Becky Hammond come here, a Greg Popovich disciple and a former WNBA star. So we answered that one talking about the female coach, but here's one from eFlow11. And, you know, he is talking about the comments that Stephen A. Smith had on First Take. I don't even really know if they were comments as much as the action of him walking off the set. He was very upset that Stevens was promoted with no experience and that no minority candidates were considered that would have had front office experience. I just want to answer this question here. You know, Eric is the name here. He says, hey, Chris, watching First Take, I knew what the narrative was going to be. Stevens promotion being a decision aided by race. I think it was a bad basketball move, race aside, but interested in your thoughts. So I just want to bring this to the table. I do think overall there's an issue in the NBA with not necessarily giving minority candidates the same opportunity that other candidates get. I don't have a problem in this particular case with Brad Stevens. He's been in the organization for 8 years. They're obviously very fond of him. He knows the people in the front office. It gives them continuity with Mike Zarin and those guys. But generally speaking, I think Stephen A. and others have a point that it's not always a great look when people with no experience of a certain race get elevated to these jobs and other people don't get that same sort of benefit of the doubt, or they even have the experience and still can't even get interviews for these jobs.
No, it's completely fair. And, you know, I think we'll see as part of like Bragg had asked yesterday, like, how will the, you know, are you going to stick with the staff that you have that Danny leaves behind, or will there be change? I think there has to be an infusion of different voices, and whether that's female or minority or whatever, I think he will have more diversity in that group moving forward. Allison Feaster is obviously elevated to a more of a front office role since her arrival. I think that's one voice that Brad really trusts. And I can see her role elevating, especially because we don't know how it's all going to shake down with the people that remain. You know, is Austin Age still going to be part of this?
Sounds like he is.
You would think. I mean, without his father here, you know, or if Danny lands somewhere else, like there could be a chance for him.
That wasn't Forsberg coughing, by the way. He was talking about a certain team in the Western Conference that's a number one seed that just advanced.
And who's his golf buddy is now the owner of the thing with Ryan Smith, is it right?
Smith, the owner of the Utah Jazz.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, there's going to be opportunities there, and maybe the Ainge family goes out there. You know, Danny talked about it on the radio today. He's got some flexibility. He can, he can leave Boston for, a while. Like, it also wouldn't surprise me if he's calling games next year. I don't know. Like, the world is open to what Danny Ainge wants to do. So, but yeah, I do think, in general, I think they they need to do a better job of like the whole league as a whole and the Celtics included need to find more diversity within their organization. And I think that will happen. I think Brad is acutely aware of that and that there is a need for that in this organization.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great answer. Like I said, I don't see this as a Celtics issue. I think it's a league issue. And I think, like I said, this case is an interesting one and a very specific one just because of the ownership group, how much they like continuity, the fact they want to retain Brad, everything that's happening. I don't have a problem with them elevating Brad Stevens here, but I think in general, Eric, your point is a good one with this question, which you sent us at take5@WCVB.com that I think some people and Stephen A certainly was one of them will be rubbed the wrong way by this because it's a larger problem in the league as a whole. I now want to ask you about something, which is really what I thought we'd be talking about instead of the shakeup in the front office, the shakeup on the roster. So put your Brad Stevens cap on. Obviously, you got to find a coach. But beyond that, if you're Brad Stevens, what are you doing to remake this roster? Are you re-signing Evan Fournier? Would you trade Marcus Smart? Are you offloading Tristan Thompson? Is there any way you can move on from Kemba Walker and the 70 plus million left on that contract? What is sort of your Marshall plan for the Celtics?
I was just going to say yes to all of that because, okay. I think, look, I thought coming into this offseason, they had a ton of tough choices. I thought there was five things and I don't, maybe we can get through each individually,
but do your thing.
All right. The Kemba thing to me is the number one, right? Like they've got to figure out, is it more prudent to cross your fingers and that it'll somehow remain upright and will somehow morph his game to better complement Jason and Jaylen long-term? Or do you try to move them with an onerous contract that you're going to have to take back some? You're going to have to sacrifice draft capital, which maybe Brad Stevens doesn't care about because he doesn't love rookies. Or, you know, are you taking on a bad contract? And does John Wall help you any more than crossing your fingers with Kemba? So I think that's the first sort of domino that's got to fall. If Kemba's here, then I think Marcus Smart is gone. I think like it's just a tough decision where they're not in a position where they're going to be able to pay him his next deal. And as for all the intangibles, and as much as I can't envision a Celtics team without Marcus Smart during the Brad Stevens era, I do think that that's probably your best trade asset too. So you're probably moving him. Maybe he's bundled with Tristan Thompson to go get a four that you desperately needed this year, or the point guard, or whatever the case may be. Fournier, after watching me in the playoffs, so I thought that was the like number two thing for me is like, what happens with Evan Fournier? I don't know if I'm ready to pay him $18 to $20 million based on the way they targeted him in that Brooklyn series. They need size and shooting. You can probably do it at a little bit cheaper cost, maybe not to the level that Evan Fournier is capable. But when I look at Jason and Jaylen, like what's going to be the identity of this team? Like they need to get back to a defensive backbone. So maybe that plays into the Smart conversation as well, but I need them to have bigger wings who are capable of defending, especially when you're going up against the likes of Harden, Durant and Kyrie. And so maybe that's more where your resources go than overpaying, which means that they're likely going to sign and trade Evan Fournier to his next destination and get ready, Gasper, another full year of $20 million dollar trade exception as my head explodes on live television every night. I'm excited for that. We talked about Smart. That was my number three. Number four is what happens at the back end of the bench.
Yes.
I think this is where we'll find out that Brad was not happy with the roster construction and what the pieces that he was dealt with. I think it'll be overhauled very strongly. Okay. Like they don't have a lot of resources to go do it. And they are going to have to lean into the development of Nesmith and Langford and Pritchard and guys like that. And there were some encouraging signs there at the end of that playoff series with those guys. But I do think the back end of the roster has to look different. And I'll keep saying it, 2019 draft class, check the outs on your leases because I'm not sure. like Carson, Tremont. I think Romeo has shown enough that, but he should be in the gym working on that 3-point shot every single day this summer if he's going to be a rotation guy. And then Grant, Grant's the nicest human being on earth. I hate when I have to come on here and say like, but I just don't know what he is at the NBA level. Yeah.
He's limited.
He's good at a lot of good minutes at small ball, but I just don't know if they desperately needed a four this year that they could lean on. And Grant and Shemmy and Jabari, no one was able to fill that role. And that's on Danny Ainge, but they've got to address that this offseason, whether it's through the draft, whether it's through a veteran, they need to solidify that spot.
To me, Forsby, they feel like they're a little bit landlocked in that they don't have a ton of flexibility in terms of the roster or their finances. And there are not a lot of great options here. There will be change. The question in my mind is, it small C change or big C change? And to me, big C change is bringing in a superstar type guy like a Bradley Beal or a Karl Anthony Towns. Do you think Brad Stevens at all would consider moving on from Jaylen Brown and trying to bring in, say, Bradley Beal, who sounded a little lukewarm on the Wizards going forward after they were eliminated on Wednesday night? Or is that just not in his nature and the organization is just really wedded to riding it out with these two fabulous young stars?
Well, I think it all hinges on what Jason Tatum wants. Like, Jason Tatum will be an assistant GM on this team for the next 10 years because if he's here for 10 years, because you have to make sure that what he wants is what you do in order to keep your best asset, your best chance at being a title contender. So if he goes to Brad and says, hey, look, me and Bradley have been talking, we kind of want to do this. And Brad says, well, that would mean training Jalen. And Tatum says, okay, you know, that's what I want, what we need to do. You know, then maybe they think about it. If Jason says, like, I really want to see this thing through with Jalen and like figure out how to best complement each other. And I'm really excited about that. You know, I think that's what happens. But I also think Brad understands how important Jalen is to this team right now, you know, especially in just what he does on and off the court and the voice he has, his ability when he's injured to hold a 4-minute press conference and fire back at Kyrie, unlike any of the players on the roster were willing to do on the court. So my guess is Jalen and Jason are here and they're here for the long term. And you're left trying to figure out how do you get back to a position where you can add a third piece that, you know, you hoped Kemba would be, but just hasn't been reliable enough to get out there. And how do you untangle that knot and figure out what the next big splash move is?
Yeah, I mean, moves that I proposed in the past, and I'm far from a GM, but moving Marcus Smart to a team like Atlanta and seeing if you can get something back from them. Bogdanovich would be
great.
That.
I love that, by the way, the Bogdanovich thing. Yeah. You were the one. Common to the league office.
Yeah, I mean, and Bogdanovich is good. It's just, you know, that's a $72 million deal. They need to re-sign John Collins, who's been good for them in the playoffs. I don't know if I would trade Smart for Gallinari, but he is the four that they need. If Atlanta threw something else in there, maybe like Gallinari and Kevin Huerter, I would consider that deal just for some depth. But I think there's some fits there. With Fournier, nice guy, but look at his playoff history, Forsby. I mean, he's averaged 11.7 points per game in the playoffs and shot 37.4%. And it's not like it's a small sample size. He's played in 19 playoff games. I just don't think he's going to get you where you want to go. I'll move on from him. I want to ask you about your guy, Robert Williams. A tremendous talent, tremendous potential. No bigger Robert Williams fan than Chris Forsberg. Can they count on him? Can they rely on him? And does the offseason checklist include making sure you have some backup for him if you can't rely on him?
Oh, yeah. So, like, even the president of the fan club has to admit that you need someone that maybe is not your definitive starter, but like they need a 1A, 1B situation with Rob, especially for those instances where his health flares up. And like, look, I keep asking people around the organization, are these injuries we should be worried about? Is it bad luck? You know, and the general sense is like, you know, turf toe isn't something that's going to plague him throughout his career, but these little injuries keep flaring up, and there's been the hip, and you know, there's just always been something. So I'll relent. You have to have a backup plan. And that's part of the reason we can look back, and no one wants to look back now, but like the Tice move, which we both sort of were against at that time, you know, I understand the reasons for it, to clear playing time, to stay below the tax, but man, you know, they really needed a Daniel Tice at some point. And I think they missed his floor stretching abilities. I just don't see how you bring back Tristan when he really bogs down the offense, and his offensive rebounding is great. And if he was the backup, you know, and the guy who can be like that playoff leader, which he showed in one game, you know, like there's value there, but I just think they need something different.
If I am watching Tristan Thompson next year, I want it to be on Instagram or wherever the Kardashians are going. I don't want it to be on the court with the Celtics. Where are the Kardashians going, Ellen? Their show is ending. What's next for them?
Did you see that there was pictures of when the Celtics were in Brooklyn of Kemba and Tristan and Travis Barker and Kim? They were all,
oh my God.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
This is the most excited Ellen has ever been doing this podcast now.
I'll send you the snapshots that I got sent.
Yeah, please do that. And they're going to Hulu. And all I ask is that Tristan stays employed, because he's going to come for Chloe's money if not. So we need him on a team.
We can bring up the Miles Turner argument again. If they move on from Evan Fournier, and if Tristan wasn't the right guy, man, Gasper, You're gonna make me put my tail between my legs and admit they whiffed on that one. They probably should have gotten more, and maybe they should have taken that offer.
He was at one point in his career a rim protector. He is not that anymore, and I think you saw that this year. Teams had no compunction at all. They had no fear of going into the paint and challenging the Celtics when Tristan was there. Very different when your guy Time Lord was in there, where he was swatting stuff all over the place. And that's sort of what the Celtics need. Speaking of time, we're running close to the end of ours. So I do want to wrap it with this. And it's a little bit of a serious take, but I feel like we should address it because you and I both are not fully on board with the Celtics story here and timeline, which they are really sticking to in terms of Danny Ainge. So I want to ask you this. There was some stuff that resurfaced after he was on Tutcher and Rich talking about he had never, and I'm paraphrasing here, he had never witnessed or heard of any instances of racism during his 26 years with the Celtics. That's player and coach. Something resurfaced that he did with WBUR a few years ago when he was asked about the political activism of today's players. And I'm just going to read it. He said, I mean, they're NBA players. I'm around them all the time. I'm much more curious about what you have to say about politics than any NBA player or any famous player in Hollywood. They'd probably be the last people on earth that I would ask for their opinion of political views. But at the same time, I think Greg Popovich has earned my trust as a fan and as a person who knows him and has been around him, as has Steve Kerr, who is also vocal and is another guy I really like as a person. I don't like all their opinions, but I do respect their opinions. But I think I said Steve Kerr and Popovich. Yeah, I like listening to them. There's not really many players that I really care what they have to say that are influencing me in any way, in any aspect of life. Do you think that those sort of dismissive comments that resurfaced had anything to do with Danny stepping down, whether it's the organization wanting him to do that or feeling like, man, maybe I'm Danny Ainge. Maybe he felt I have a disconnect with today's NBA player.
I think, again, much like the money with Brad, and I think it all factors in to some degree. And if they had been a little bit more successful this year, maybe that's like, okay, you know, maybe the disconnect doesn't feel as grand. But, you know, like when you read that, it is jarring. And I don't think there's any way, like, and what he said on Tutcher and Rich was jarring to me, you know, while, you know, I think it's all part of the equation. I wonder if Danny had a chance to been asked that question now after what they went through with the bubble and what he's heard with Jaylen Brown the past 18 months. I wonder if his views would be a little bit different about how he views, you know, how much he trusts NBA players on that political side of things. I think maybe there's a new degree of respect for that after what they've been through, but it's still, you know, two instances where it wasn't a good look. And I do think it had to at least factor into the process when you're discussing, okay, you know, is he the right guy long-term here? And all the other factors that go into it. I don't think it was the tipping point, but I do think it's part of the conversation.
So we'll leave it there. This was a great conversation. Not the one I think we thought we'd be having a few days after the end of the season. And I do just have to say, I did actually, when I was at, you know, pre-pandemic, I was in Fort Myers covering the Red Sox, really the last assignment I did for sports where I had to travel. And I did, for the first time, try Zaxby's. And I don't know if I just got a bad one or you've talked it up. I am about to slander Zaxby's. And I've waited until the end to do this, so there's not much you can do about it. But I went there and I was very excited. And maybe it's just like, you know, it's like the movie The Hangover. Like, so many people talked about it and talked it up that when I saw it, I was like, it's good, but it's not like amazing. And that's kind of how I felt about Zaxby's. Again, maybe I just got a bad one in Fort Myers, Florida, but I was really psyched for it and it kind of disappointed.
All right. So I won't turn this into another hour long podcast. We can actually have a full blown Southern fast food episode if you'd like.
You are the master. You are the master. I bow down to you. You are the master of these places.
First off, I mean, take a grain of salt with anything that you get in Fort Myers, Florida.
Okay. Fair.
The level could be a little bit lower than typical, but, I will fully relent that Zaxby's is not in the top five of the Southern chains. It's another option, and they do have good, the chicken is good, but their menu is a little bit limited.
Okay.
I would say, like, you know, my kids like it because they have chicken fingers and stuff like that and lots of sauces. If you're going to rank, like, for me, it's Bojangles, Cookout, I'd probably go to Steak and Shake before I went to before I went to Zaxby's. I know I'm leaving out a criminal amount of spots here that it's not on our like must go to when we're down in South Carolina. Gotcha. It's right there.
Even though we have Chick-fil-A up here, it tastes even better down there.
I mean, it really does. I can't explain that one either. But
see, this is the stuff that Chris is really up on. So when he's giving his opinions about who the Celtics should get, you should dismiss those. But when he gives the opinions on Southern fast food, no better place to go than Chris Forsberg. No, I'm joking.
I'm not joking. Like, I feel like that's like legitimate. I can do airlines and I mean, we could just go off.
All right. Well, Chris, thanks for joining us for this emergency podcast. We really, really appreciate it. Great stuff from you. That is NBC Sports Boston, NBA and Celtics insider Chris Forsberg, helping us break down the seismic shakeup in the Celtics organization. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Take 5 podcast. We appreciate it as always. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the podcast so others can find it and enjoy it. And now you can email us at take5@wcvb.com. We'd love to get your feedback and hear your thoughts. We'll catch you next time.